Yo, Hua, hula, put up, drop it. At a minimum, I amuse myself. For anyone who hasn't seen the show before, they're like, what is Huta, Puta, Da Da, drop it. Anyway, all right, you want to talk about a power panel? Jimmy Dore, Michael Schur, Anna Kasparian, let alone me, okay?
Let alone me.
Okay. So let's talk about a power panel. We know about those four people.
Okay, now, on a momentous day, Trump Care is dead, but that's not the most important story of the day. In the second hour, a world-changing story.
Yes.
Whatever you do, don't die now, because you might never die. Okay, I'm not playing around. Wow. I'm going to go nuts about the NAD Plus story, okay? It is an amazing, maybe the most amazing story we've ever done. That's in the second hour. Don't you dare miss it. Okay, number two. And that's not the story that I'm going to shock the world on. That's in the first hour. Look, do I ever not deliver on a tease? You will be shocked when I tell you what I'm going to tell you in the first hour. And when we do this hour in the NAD Plus One story, you're going to be like, you can do just that.
I thought I had NAD Plus, but it turned out it was just assist.
Well, you're gonna want
NAD Plus. You're gonna want NAD Plus.
Are you gonna want NAD Plus?
Oh, what is NAD Plus?
Well, you gotta just sit around for the second hour.
I have to sit for a whole hour until I can know what NAD Plus is.
You don't know what it is, right? But I didn't get the second hour stories. I don't know what it is.
No, I don't care.
When you find out, you will do anything possible to get your hands on it.
Yes. Wow. And just whatever you do, don't die. Okay. Because help is on the way.
Jimmy and I will actually have a head start because we're out of here after the first. Oh, yes. You're here for the first.
No.
We let's go get some NAD Plus.
I'm going to get some NAD Plus. Can you get it on Amazon Prime? Because I would.
I'm sure at some point you can.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it might be on Hulu Plus actually.
Oh.
Okay. Anyway, all right. Let's get going with a giant story that Anna's
all
got.
All right. When it came to various issues that Republicans are against here in the United States, remember what Trump promised when he was on the campaign trail? If you don't, take a quick look.
You are going to be so proud of your country because we're going to turn it around and we're going to start winning again. We're going to win so much. We're going to win at every level. We're going to win economically. We're going to win with the economy. We're going to win with military. We're going to win with health care and for our veterans. We're going to win with every single facet. We're going to win so much, you may even get tired of winning. And you'll say, please, please, it's too much winning. We can't take it anymore. Mr. President, it's too much. And I'll say, no, it isn't. We have to keep winning. We have to win more. We're going to win more. We're going to win so much.
I mean, maybe Trump's administration is winning so much that the American people and Congress have already decided no more winning. In fact, they have canceled the vote, the House vote on the American Health Care Act. Of course, this is the proposal to replace Obamacare. They didn't have enough votes, so they decided to boom, cancel the vote altogether.
You know, it's an interesting theory by Anna. Everybody else in the country is viewing it as a giant loss, but maybe he just got tired of winning already.
Yeah, they're just tired of winning. That's what happened.
He did predict that there would be a point where we would get tired of winning. Apparently, it was yesterday, and today we just couldn't handle it anymore.
Yeah,
it was the victory off the fresh off that Mike Flynn victory.
So, of course, none of the Democrats in Congress were going to support the replacement for Obamacare. However, there were a number of Republicans in Congress that did not want to support it, specifically in the House. And some argue that the replacement wasn't conservative enough, meaning that it gave too many entitlements and handouts to the middle class. And then some argued it didn't cover my constituents enough and this would be political suicide if I voted in favor of it. So as a result, they decided, okay, let's just cancel the vote because it's probably not going to pass and it's going to look really, really bad. But keep in mind that Trump was pressuring Congress to go forward with the vote nonetheless. He's like, no more changes, no more negotiating. I want the vote to take place today, but it ended up getting canceled anyway. So let's hear from Paul Ryan, who's very disappointed about what happened.
Moving from an opposition party to a governing party comes with growing pains. And well, we're feeling those growing pains today. We came really close today, but we came up short. I spoke to the president just a little while ago, and I told him that the best thing I think to do is to pull this bill, and he agreed with that decision. I will not sugarcoat this. This is a disappointing day for us. Doing big things is hard. All of us, myself included, we will need time to reflect on how we got to this moment, what we could have done to do it better. But ultimately, this all kind of comes down to a choice. Are all of us willing to give a little to get something done? Are we willing to say yes to the good, to the very good, even if it's not the perfect? I'm really proud of the bill that we produced. It would make a dramatic improvement in our healthcare system and provide relief by people hurting under Obamacare. The president gave his all in this effort. He did everything he possibly could to help people see the opportunity that we have with this bill. He's really been fantastic. Still, we got to do better, and we will. I absolutely believe that. This is a setback, no two ways about it. But it is not the end of the story, because I know that every man and woman in this conference is now motivated more than ever to step up our game, to deliver on our promises. I know that everyone is committed to seizing this incredible opportunity that we have, and I sure am.
Wow.
Okay, so I love seeing the Republicans, one saying, doing big things is hard. Oh, really? Oh, really? And during the 8 years of Obama, they're like, oh, yeah, why don't you just get it done? And then I think a lot of the media would go along with it. Why don't you just have a beer summit and get it done? You know, why didn't they have a beer summit with the Freedom Caucus? Why didn't they golf with them? I mean, it's not like Trump doesn't golf. And we hear his golf games are very important to the nation. So why didn't you get it done? Where's your iced tea summit? Why? How come you didn't do any of that? And now come to find out, oh, in order to legislate, you need compromise. And even internally, they will not compromise. So the result of that is failure.
Yes, actually, I want to read a quote to you, because I think that this is very symbolic, or indicative at least, of what's happening in Congress right now among Republicans. Let's go to graphic two. This is a quote from Representative Chris Collins, a Republican. He says, there's some divisiveness within our conference now that's not healthy. I've never seen this before. People are just refusing to talk to each other. They're storming past each other. This is not good.
Chris Collins was the first member of Congress to back Trump. He was the first endorser of Donald Trump. For a long time, the only one in Congress. And yeah, that's a telling thing. So you see this fracture. And you know what? You see Paul Ryan standing there. You know, but by the grace of the Freedom Caucus goes he, because he was a Freedom Caucus away from not being Speaker. So when you see this divisiveness that we talked about within the party, that Collins just talked about there within the Republican Party, was there before they held the Congress, won the White House, and held the Senate, and it was a question mark going in as to what is the Republican Party going to do about the divisions and the fractures within it, and it was all laid bare again here after their little happy days of election. And inaugurations, they're back to having the exact same problems that they went into last fall with. Yeah. And you're seeing it now, and you're seeing it on what was supposed to be a signature piece of legislation. Donald Trump, and we're going to get to this later, said today that he never said it was going to be the first thing he did. He said inauguration day, he might call a special session just to do Obamacare, repeal and replace. And this is a big loss.
And Ryan today admitted later in the day, quote, we're going to be living with Obamacare for the foreseeable future. So what now? Okay. So and it's interesting, this battle was a little bit between Donald Trump and the Koch brothers, because the Koch brothers literally put out a statement saying, we will spend millions of dollars to defeat anyone who votes yes or support anyone who votes no. So those Republican donors came in and said it's either our money or Donald Trump. And that is a fascinating development. Now, Trump is not the good guy here. This bill was already draconian, and he made concessions to the Freedom Caucus, made it deeply draconian, right? But still the Koch brothers, foaming at the mouth, were like, not enough. And they demanded through their bribes that the Freedom Caucus vote no. And no matter how many concessions they got, they still wanted to vote no, and hence they couldn't get a deal. And now Obamacare remains. So it's going to be interesting to see if the Koch brothers change their strategy, or did they secretly want Obamacare to stay in place? I mean, if they didn't and they really wanted to repeal it, this was a curious way of showing it.
Well, you know, if empty rhetoric could get that bill passed, I think they'd get it passed because Paul Ryan was really flinging it there for a while. We've done great work. We can really, we got to be better. We're going to be better. We're going to, it's a great opportunity and all that stuff. And do you know the kind of stuff that the Freedom Caucus is upset about? They want to get rid of the individual, they want to get rid of pre-existing condition coverage. They want to get rid of that. Like, I don't know. Why don't you just take it, try to, I don't know. Could there be a more unpopular thing that you could do? What do they think they're going to get out of that? And why would they do? So this is the kind of thing. This is the, so it's fun to see them have to govern. And this is what Barack Obama kept talking about. Oh, the fever's going to break. They can't even compromise with each other. They're not going to compromise with Barack Obama. So this, it is fun to see. I can't believe, do people know that's why they can't get it passed? Because they want to get rid of pre-existing condition coverage and stuff like that, that the Senate knows is unpopular.
So I like that you asked that question. I think Republicans looked at the issue of repealing and replacing Obamacare as a layup. I think they thought it was going to be an easy thing to do politically. But it's actually one of the most difficult things to do politically because you have two different groups at odds, right? You have your constituents who now know what it's like to not have to worry about pre-existing conditions, to have certain protections under Obamacare, to have Medicare, Medicaid expansion under Obamacare. They like it. They don't want to get rid of it, which is why you saw all those angry town halls, right? So you have that group, and then you have the Koch brothers groups, right, who think, no, this replacement idea is too liberal. It gives away too much, and we don't like it. So it's political suicide in one of two ways, right? Either you piss off your constituents or you piss off your donors. So, I love it, it's so good.
Yeah. And so there's two things that come out of that that are super important. First of all, guys, there's no magic. So Trump said, don't worry, there's magic. Somehow, because I'm such a great deal maker, I can get the moderate Republicans who will lose their seats if they vote to get rid of things like pre-existing condition coverage to agree with conservative Republicans who want to get rid of all of that and more, right? So, but there is no way to actually walk that line. There's no magic. They don't agree. And if they don't agree, you're not going to win. And so now we, if you were under that illusion, you should be dispelled of that illusion. And so go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, one thing that I think when you talk about that and listening to what Anna's saying, one thing that's being overlooked here, and people are talking about it, you know, people said to me, well, you know, the president's approval rating is at 37%, but what does that matter? He's scheduled to be in office till 2021. Who cares what his approval rating is now? Yeah, it's not good, but we sort of knew it wouldn't be good. It mattered today. You know, it mattered when Republicans see their president, who was unpopular with a lot of them to begin with, at 37%. There's less fear in not going along with the White House and the way that Congress has worked, the way that they see this stuff. So it does matter because that's the blood in the water that we've said we'd be smelling eventually was an unpopular president that these congressional Republicans could run away from. I think it's going to happen in the Senate too. And it would have been interesting if the AHC had passed today because it would have gone to the Senate where it would have been much more caustic and much more, I guess, observable the way that the Republicans behaved around this. So I don't think people should overlook the president's popularity or lack of popularity. That 37% number is really important in what happened.
That's right. I got to say two things about that because when the Koch brothers threaten the millions of dollars, if Trump's sitting at 60% approval rating, they think, well, maybe I lose my seat if I cross Trump. I'm going to forego the millions of dollars or risk the money being spent against me. Because I don't dare cross Donald Trump. Right. But if he's at 37% approval rating, you're like, yeah, whatever, dude. I'd rather take the Koch brothers' money rather than deal with you. And I could live with that. So that's why. And then it becomes a vicious cycle for Trump. Because as we showed you in the beginning, he promised nothing but winning. Now, and that's why a lot of people voted for him. This guy's a businessman. He's successful.
He knows how to win.
He knows how to make deals. Now, when they see, oh, no, it turns out he was full of crap. He doesn't know how to make deals. And he doesn't win. Then his popularity could slip further, and then he has less leverage and makes the next deal even harder to make. And then the other thing is the ignorance of the American people. And again, I'm with you guys, and I'm not blaming you for it. I'm mainly blaming television for it. But you don't know what's going on here in terms of policy, and I'm saying it obviously on a macro scale. Because 83% of the American people want to keep Obamacare's expansion of Medicaid. I can give you dozens of numbers. I'll just give you that one to focus on for a second. The 83% on any topic is an unbelievably high approval rating. And I mean, that means that it is untouchable in politics. But when you're asked, do you want to get rid of Obamacare? A lot of you said yes. Those two things don't make sense. You can't get rid of Obamacare and keep Obamacare's Medicaid expansion. You can't do it. So you told the Republicans, I hate Obamacare, get rid of it. And then you told them, well, don't. I love the Medicaid expansion. I love covering pre-existing conditions. I love covering kids under their parents until the age of 26. I love 18 different provisions in here. So you put them in an untenable position, and there is no magic. So Donald Trump lost today, Paul Ryan lost today, but if you're a Republican voter, it was your fault.
So agree. I just think that right now, you know, you say he's got a 37% approval rating. Right now, I have a feeling Trump is putting together a tweet that's bragging about that his failed healthcare bill got bigger ratings than Arnold Schwarzenegger's Apprentice. That's what I think he's getting. Look at the ratings my healthcare failure bill got. It's the number. It was the biggest win forever for a healthcare bill. And that, you know, that's what he's going
to
say.
Yeah, he'll find a way to spin it.
And the key here is, the Democrats have to be able to stick Trump's unpopularity to the rest of the Republicans. They won't do it, I don't think. I think they're going to let the Republicans distance themselves from Trump if that's what they need to do in the midterms, which is a mistake. And so let's see what they do.
Mm-hmm. Well, distancing themselves and actually going after Trump are two different things.
Right.
So if the Democrats are able to, you know, sit by and let that happen politically, while they do things legislatively that they can, and this whole resist thing is great because it's on the floor of Congress too in many respects. So it remains to be seen how that happens politically. But in order for anything to happen to Donald Trump and to this presidency, unfortunately, because of the way that the Congress is now, it has to start with Republicans. And I think today was the day it didn't. Donald Trump already blaming Democrats for this,
you know,
which is unbelievable. You know, that's
incredible. We have video of that, actually, that I would like to toss to. Let's go to video number 3.
We had no Democrat support. We had no votes from the Democrats. They weren't going to give us a single vote, so it's a very difficult thing to do. I've been saying for the last year and a half that the best thing we can do, politically speaking, is let Obamacare explode. It is exploding right now. With no Democrat support, we couldn't quite get there. We're just a very small number of votes short in terms of getting our bill passed. A lot of people don't realize how good our bill was because they were viewing phase one, but when you add phase two. So what would be really good with no Democrat support, if the Democrats, when it explodes, which it will soon, if they got together with us and got a real health care bill, I'd be totally open to it, and I think that's going to happen. I think the losers are Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, because now they own Obamacare. They own it, 100% own it. And this is not a Republican health care. This is not anything but a Democrat health care. Now, when they all become civilized and get together and try and work out a great health care bill for the people of this country, we're open to it. We're totally open to it.
Okay, what I love in that ridiculous response was that a lot of people don't even know how good this health care bill was. You know who else doesn't know what was in the health care bill? Donald Trump. Let's look at video 4.
I'll tell you what's going to come out of it is a better bill. I really believe a better bill, because there were things in this bill I didn't particularly love. And I think it's a better bill.
What specifically are those?
Well, I think we could have things that I would have liked more. And if we had bipartisan, I really think we could have a health care bill that would be the ultimate. I think this was a very good bill. I think it will be even better the next time around. And I don't think that's going to be in too long a period of time.
Anything specifically you want to see change going from this bill to the next?
No, I mean, I don't want to speak about specifics, but there are things I would have liked even more. But I thought overall this was a very, very good bill.
No,
unbelievable.
He looks like Alec Baldwin now. Okay.
Yeah. And that's true. That's a great point.
And what a child. He doesn't know anything in the bill. And he's like, I would like to make it better, and I would like more things in it. You child, you're so over your head. This is not a family business. You can't pretend anymore. For all these years, he's been saying, I'm so rich, it'd make your head spin, but nobody could check. Now we can check every single thing you do. Was it a success? Was it not a success? So you had 6 bankruptcies, and I wanted to have the bankruptcies. I liked bankruptcies. I like more of them, right? And then we would gloss over the details. Now you're in the public spotlight forever. You can't gloss over the details. A bankruptcy is a bankruptcy. It's because you're an idiot and you bankrupted yourself, right? Failing on this bill is failure. So, I blame the others, not me. Again, every time it's childish. They're the. He even said the word losers because he knows this one stings. He looks like a loser. So he's like, no, I'm not the loser. They are. Third grade trick. And you guys know it. You've seen it in third grade, all of you.
Right. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, the winners today. I mean, that's exactly who they are. Whether you like it with them or their politics or whatever, they're the ones who sort of ushered, not necessarily Schumer as much as Pelosi, this legislation, compromised on it, negotiated, whatever had to be done to get it in the first place. This was a good day for Nancy Pelosi and her caucus that stuck together. They all would have voted for, I mean, against this bill, which is amazing. You know,
that is amazing.
That shouldn't be overlooked.
So that's exactly what I was going to say. Another problem for Donald Trump in this is that now that it encourages the Joe Manchins of the world who are ready to vote with him.
Yes.
These are Democrats who are conservatives in places like West Virginia where he won large. They're like, how do I vote with him? How do I appeal to the West Virginia voters that like Donald Trump? Now they go, oh, he's a paper tiger. He couldn't even get the Republicans to vote this way. And it turns out you can beat him and you can beat him pretty easy. So now it makes it harder to win over those conservative Democrats. And again, a vicious cycle of losing after losing. I don't think that's the only thing that happened here today. And I think there's a silver lining for Trump on it. But he certainly it seems oblivious to that. He looks like he's just going out here and going, well, why didn't the Democrats in this statement, why didn't the Democrats vote with me? So if you're a Trump supporter, just think about that for a second. Is the guy so simple, like so simple, that he thought, well, won't the other guys who I've yelled at and insulted, and it's their legislation and they're super proud of it, well, why don't they just vote for me? I mean, if you think that's what's going on in his head, then you think he's dumber than I think he is, right? Like, you think that is a painfully dumb guy. Oh, why didn't the guy I hate vote with me? I was trying to kill his bill. Why didn't they vote for it?
Yeah.
You really think Trump is that stupid? Or he thinks, oh, I lost. I don't want to admit it. I'm a crybaby. It was them, not me, who lost. Okay. It's one or the other.
I love that he said the Democrats lost, very much in the same way that Tom Brady and the Patriots lost. And I like also he uses adjectives as nouns, right? So he says, you know, if we could get some bipartisan on this.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to say support. You can't, bipartisan is the a modifier of support. It's not a fucking noun. It's not,
you know, he's like a smart person.
So. Yeah,
he's like a smart person.
And you know why this bill, didn't work? It's because the tagline for it or how they were trying to sell it was, hey, if you have an unaffordable illness that you can't pay for, you can keep your unaffordable illness that you can't pay for.
Yeah. And to finish all of these analogies, it's like the Falcons coming out in the post-game press conference after the Super Bowl going, I don't get it. Why didn't the Patriots help us win?
It's their fault.
This is their loss.
That's right.
This is on them.
Tom Brady's such a loser. He didn't help me win the Super Bowl.
If he wants to get civilized and help us run some better plays, I'm ready. I'm open.
Hank, you teased something before Anna go. You teased that there's a silver lining.
That's what I'm going to do right now.
All right.
Okay. Now I'm ready to shock the world. You ready to get shocked?
Okay. I am.
So there is a silver lining for Donald Trump in this otherwise gigantic failure of Trump Care. And it's this. Look, at some point, somebody had to draw the line with the Koch brothers. And so it took a giant loss for Trump to do it. And I don't know that he can recover from that loss because of the public perception, as we've been talking about all day in our coverage of this bill. But I think people are confused. Why did he draw the line on Friday and say, okay, you're going to vote for it. You're going to vote for it. I don't care. You're going to vote for it. If you don't have the votes, why would you do that? That actually is negotiating to some degree. And I'll tell you why. Because the Koch brothers are unappeasable. They're the ones who donate to the Freedom Caucus. That's the super right-wing House Republicans. And they put out a public statement saying, if you vote with Trump, we will spend millions of dollars against you. If you vote with us, we will spend millions of dollars for you. Now, that's a big, heavy threat. Now, then Trump said, okay, fine. And he conceded a lot of stuff to the Freedom Caucus. He said, okay, we'll make it more right-wing. And they made it more right-wing. And the Freedom Caucus came back and said, no, it's still not enough. So Trump had to draw the line and had to say, hey, Koch brothers, you can play this game with Obama all day long, okay? But I'm drawing the line now because you wouldn't come to a deal, we're going to have Obamacare. You happy now? So when he says Democrats come back to the table, he doesn't actually mean it. He means Koch brothers, you come back to the table. Because until you come back to the table, we're going to have Obamacare. So and I'm done with it. I told you we were going to vote on Friday, and you guys, and it turns out we were going to lose the vote because you said to, you bribed your guys to vote the other way. Okay, fine, then we lose. We have Obamacare. Hope you're happy. Now, the next time I tell you that we're going to have a vote, and I'm not going to give you any more concessions, you'll take me a little bit more seriously. So that, even though you know I have tremendous disrespect for Donald Trump, and I don't value his intelligence, one of the few things he does is he does negotiate. That doesn't mean he gets great deals all the time, and he didn't get a deal here.
The first time he said to deal, the guy who wrote the book about deals, and the deal didn't work.
And he didn't get one. But I know as a negotiator, sometimes you've got to say no in the first deal to get the second deal. So maybe I'm being overly generous to him, but I think that is not that terrible a strategy.
Well, when the second deal is tax reform, I disagree, because it doesn't matter. You're going to have the Kochs, you're going to have all the wealthy people, and the next deal that they're going to get is tax reform, and they're going to overlook health care at that point, and it's not going to be that those same alliances are going to be right together on tax reform, if that's in fact what's next, and that's what they say. If they break this down and do regular order, which means taking some of these elements of Obamacare into committees and joint committees and special sessions, and they're able to break different things about it apart and get Democratic support for things that, you know, there are things that aren't working within Obamacare, even if you kept it the same, then it's not a victory for Trump either. I mean, then the Democratic Congress and Paul Ryan would get the credit for that. I don't see a silver lining here for him. I see what you're saying. I don't see people registering that. And I think when they move to the next thing, it doesn't matter what happened with the Koch brothers on
yeah, I agree in part. The American people aren't going to see any of that. That's behind the scenes. They don't even know the Koch brothers.
But it has an enduring effect.
Yeah. The Koch brothers are bribing the Freedom Caucus. Right, they have no idea because TV never tells them, right? But as a message he's sending to the Koch brothers. Mm-hmm. And so you're right. They would certainly on tax reform, they're like, agreed. We're all 100% right wing. We're going to rob the middle class to pay the rich. Trump and Koch brothers are going to high five on that.
Right.
They're going to build a swamp together on that one. But on this one, Trump was 90% right wing. The Koch brothers wanted 100% right wing, and Trump said, you're not going to get it, and okay, fine, then you're going to get 0%, we're going to stick with Obamacare.
I know, but doesn't this have more to do with Congress? Because remember, there are individuals in Congress that were swayed by what the Koch brothers wanted. And so they'll continue to be influenced by the Koch brothers. Donald Trump doesn't really matter in the equation. So his unwillingness to move the needle in a more right-wing direction doesn't really matter.
No, it does, right? And I'll tell you why. Because those Freedom Caucus guys, as well as all of the Republican politicians in Congress, and most of the Democratic politicians, are errand boys. Okay, that all they do is, hey, donors, what would you like? Sure, let's just do that, mm-hmm. right? So the next time the Koch brothers give an order to follow, they're going to remember. Well, sometimes if we play chicken with Trump, he goes, okay, you get 0%. Mm-hmm. Before, we used to get everything we wanted. Now we can't get everything we want. So now sometimes we're going to get 0. Maybe we should negotiate and take a 90% draconian right-wing bill that also still gives us $600 billion in tax cuts for the rich, still destroys health care for the middle class mm-hmm. and the poor. Yeah, let's just take our winnings off the table. Which, by the way, would be terrible for the country. But in terms of what Trump wants, it would get him closer to that in the long run.
Right, but the crux of what Anna's saying is right. I mean, the Freedom Caucus decided this bill. If the Freedom Caucus had gone in lockstep, only a few of them were going to vote yes. I can only think of one right this second, Morgan Griffith from Virginia, who said that he would vote for it, even though he wasn't crazy about it, which I never, of course, understand. The Congress, this was in Congress's hands. And it was in Congress's hands the same way I said earlier that the speakership was in Congress's hands. Boehner's exit and Ryan's ascent and McCarthy dropping out at that point. But, you know, we're going back a little bit. But this was too. The Congress played the president because he couldn't move the, and for whatever reasons, whether it's the Koch brothers or not, I think these are some pretty believing people, these Freedom Caucus members. Yes, they get a lot of money. Everyone on the Hill gets a lot of money from someplace, right? The fact fact that they have been like this on Obamacare, they would like to see health care go entirely. So that these are people who are dogmatic about the way they approach it. So I think Congress had a very big part to do with this, and also exposing the weaknesses of this president.
So we'll see next time. I don't know if it'll be determinative, but we'll see if all of a sudden the Koch brothers lighten up, and if they lighten up, if the Freedom Caucus lightens up. Mm-hmm. My guess is, and we might disagree on this, Michael, that the Freedom Caucus will lighten up if they receive the memo to lighten the fuck up, because you actually work for the Koch brothers. So I know that they get up in the morning and have to look in the mirror and think that's not what they're doing. But in fact, that is what
they're
doing.
Well, of course. They, of course, that's what they're doing. But they're also doing it because this time the Koch brothers agreed with them on this stuff. And when the Koch brothers don't, the Freedom Caucus, listen, the Freedom Caucus, the Koch brothers were not against Paul Ryan's ascent to the speakership. And that helped get him there because of the way the Freedom Caucus behaved around it. But they made it pretty tough.
Okay. We got to take our first break, guys. So that is the healthcare debacle and perhaps a silver lining, but we disagree on that. Now, when we come back, no silver lining in Keystone XL pipeline. That's a disaster for the country. And we'll give you the actual facts. And I'm going to ask these guys a question that I don't know. I'm very curious as to what the answer is. All right, back on A Young Turks. Stealth Gay writes in, Speaker Ryan, you need to time to reflect on what went wrong. You had 8 freaking years. You wasted so much of our money on your fight. That's such a great point. 8 years of trying to beat, or at least 7 years of trying to beat Obamacare, and you couldn't come up with a decent plan? You want to talk about losers, right? What do you need, another 7 years? All right, Mother of Bones says, as someone who greatly feared losses to my Medicaid, this is absolutely amazing news. I've been depressed, and today is a great day.
Yeah, it is a great day. And not only that, but a lot of people were worried about Planned Parenthood losing funding as a result of the replacement plan. So as of now, it looks like Planned Parenthood is safe.
And that was the last-ditch effort that Trump said in one of his tweet things was that, I think they just called them tweets, the most conservative members of the House are basically saying yes to Planned Parenthood, as if they would just turn around and, like, they didn't know, right?
Yeah, and so let's not overlook the fact that not only was it a great day in politics, it was an awesome day in policy.
Yeah.
We don't know how long it'll last, but for as long as it lasts, a lot of great programs just survived.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I mean, if we're talking about all the politics and it's still there, and you hear Mother of Bones, that kind of, those stories are all over.
So just one quick point. Apparently Trump called a reporter at Washington Post and had a one-on-one conversation about what happened today with healthcare. And based on that conversation, it seems as though Republicans are probably going to leave the healthcare situation alone and move on to tax reform.
Yeah.
He didn't just call Bob Costa.
Yeah.
He broke it to Bob Costa. He called him up and said, "Hello, Bob." That was the opening of the thing at the Washington Post, and said, "Yeah, we're pulling it." That's how he shared this story.
Mm-hmm. So for good news for now, Lindsay Samuelson says, just shows that it's true what Trump voters hated about Obamacare really was just the Obama part. That is such a great, great point. Finally, Chris Allen with another great point. If Trump says this is because of no Democrat support, then the Democrats should finally realize they can block terrible bills.
Yes.
You never know what happens when you fight. Great point. Excuse me, guys, I am sick today.
But if the Democrats do that and they fight, they will piss off their donors. And that's what you're not thinking.
I'm not thinking clearly. I'm sick today.
Use your head.
All right. Now, our donors are small donors who make journalism possible here. And I wanted to celebrate them. $27 from Francie in Louisiana. And now, I love the name Francie. $100 from Aubrey in Michigan. Thank you, Aubrey. And $250 from David in Pennsylvania. You guys are all the best.
I love the name David.
I like Pennsylvania.
Day. Yeah.
In fact,
great state name.
That's true.
Poor Aubrey didn't get it recognized. Aubrey's a good name, too.
I love Aubrey.
All right, thanks. We're covered.
Sounds important.
David's such a good name. We hired someone named David. David Sirota, thanks to you guys.
But you didn't fire David Kohler, which, because David's such a good name, it would be great if you know.
Oh my God, my cough has begun in earnest. We're in a lot of trouble. Anyway, tytnetwork.com/go to finish it up. Once we get to 2 million, we're done talking about it. Or first 100 days of Trump, which is a little over a month left. All right, what's next, Anna?
All right. Devin Nunes, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, is now backing down from the assertion that Donald Trump was spied on by the Obama administration. Now, just to backtrack and give you some more context into the story, the congressman held two news conferences on Wednesday to tell reporters that he had received a report showing that the intelligence community had incidentally collected information on Trump and his transition team in November, December, and January, which sounded very misleading or could be misconstrued, right? He had said, "I have seen intelligence reports that clearly show the president-elect and his team were at least monitored and disseminated out." Okay, so remember, Donald Trump had alleged that Obama had spied on him or spied on him in Trump Tower. And so he hasn't provided any evidence of that. It's a ridiculous assertion, right? And so Devin Nunes made this statement that made it seem as though there was some evidence indicating that that had happened. But of course, that's not the case. So on Thursday, the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee sent out an email about Nunes's remarks with the subject line, "Confirmed Obama spied on Trump." That was not the case. And so fast forward to today, and it turns out that Devin Nunes is backtracking or backing down from those claims. He said, "As for Trump's assertion that Obama wiretapped him, Nunes repeated Friday that he has said previously, telling reporters that didn't happen."
So Nunes is a funny cat. He's
well, here's what's funny about him. I'm going to tell you, he doesn't even pronounce it Nunes. He pronounces it Nunes. He doesn't want anything to do with that. Really, he's Nunes.
Yeah, no, wow. He's Nunes. Suck it
okay.
up. Don't be an idiot.
Yeah, no.
He's got a cousin named Chai Chai Rodriguez.
So this reminds me of Bobby Jindal, who Edwin reminded me of yesterday. Who, remember when he was like rested, tanned, ready to go? Dude, you're not tanned. You're Indian. Yeah. And you're not Devin Nunes?
Nunes.
You're Devin Nunes.
Like okay, this. Nunes is how it's pronounced.
Nunes. Okay, you self hate. Anyway.
also that's right.
Also a knucklehead. Like, I really get a sense that he doesn't know what's going on. Like, he's not one of these schemers and who's like, "Oh, I'll go out and do a press conference where I will signal to the president that we actually have some information," and he'll do it in a nuanced or nuanced way.
Yeah, he's a knucklehead.
He's just like, "Oh, hey, Donald, we got some information that says somebody might have been listened to at some point in Trump Tower. Did I do good? I was on your transition team." And then they're like, "Wait, why did you just say that? You were just supposed to do an independent investigation of him." "Oh, I was just trying to help him."
Yeah.
Aye.
Well, Hannity actually asked him about that last night on his show. And it seems like Nunes has, you know, a political reason for saying what he said and being as misleading as he was. Take a look.
"The president then said that he felt vindicated over his claims that he felt he was, well, he said wiretapping, but surveillance wiretapping, in my view, were just really parsing words. But he was picked up, at least in an incidental way. Can you give us more detail about it?"
"Well, it's tough for me to get into it, right, because I've only read the report, so I don't know all the intelligence that went into it. But to me, it's clear that I would be concerned if I was the president. And that's why I wanted him to know. And I felt like I had a duty and obligation to tell him because, as you know, he's been taking a lot of heat in the news media. And I think to some degree, there are some things that he should look at to see whether, in fact, he thinks the collection was proper or not."
Is the president taking a lot of heat for making allegations that he had absolutely no evidence for? Oh my God, please go help him with nonsense, right?
It's actually worse than that. You had a duty and obligation to not tell him because you're supposed to be doing an independent investigation of him in the House. You're the head of that committee. But I genuinely believe that he doesn't know, he doesn't understand that concept. Now he's been told, and he's like, "Oh man, that's weird. I thought I was just supposed to be a political hack. I thought I was just supposed to tell Donnie whatever Daddy wanted to hear, and to help him out in the media. Oh, I'm running an independent investigation of him. Oh, I didn't know that." Which again, if he was bright, he wouldn't have made it so obvious. He would have actually helped Donald Trump cover it up in a more sophisticated way. It then, him being such a knucklehead, then forces John McCain John McCain, who heads the Intelligence Committee in the Senate, who's also a Republican, to go, God, now we're going to have to give it to an independent body because we've shown that we can't remain independent of Donald Trump. So it's actually counterproductive to Donald Trump at the end, but these guys aren't bright enough to figure it out.
Yeah, this guy's got to go. I mean, this is the kind of thing that you get rid of a chair of an intelligence committee for. And I don't care if Adam Schiff and he have worked together well in the past. Schiff has had it with him. This is about as egregious an offense as an intelligence committee chairman could do, because what you just said is exactly right. I mean, it's the opposite of what he is charged with doing, what he did. So the guy's got to go.
So who that'd be up to Paul Ryan. I mean, who gets rid of him on the committee?
Well, I mean, the committee doesn't. You know, I don't know if I don't believe the committee can. It is up to the speaker. I don't believe the committee can vote out its chairman. But I know that Republican members of that committee, as well as obviously Democratic members of that committee, are really upset about this. And so it would be up to him to say, I'm stepping down.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you know, Ryan would say, I'm not going to fire you. But and Nunes was, he's a John Boehner acolyte. So he's somebody who came up with John Boehner, like Paul Ryan, with John Boehner as someone who he saw as one of the stars of the party.
Also, what I found interesting, and I might be wrong about this, so please clarify, Jenk, because I know you know more details about it. But apparently, the intelligence report that Nunes was referring to had to do with two foreign individuals having a conversation about Trump, and that's what it wasn't. You know, intelligence communities spying in on Trump. It's spying in on two foreign individuals having a conversation about Trump.
Yeah, so this is another double whammy for Nunes. Okay, so number one, it turns out it's not quite like how he framed it in the beginning. He framed it as, hey, they were accidentally or incidentally listening in on Trump or his team. It turns out they might have actually been listening to two foreigners talk, which they can. And they mention Trump or someone else on Trump's team. And you're supposed to black that out, but sometimes you can't, because otherwise the sentence doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. Now, look, I don't like that. I think there should be limits to that kind of wiretapping too. So, but it wasn't listening in on Trump, incidentally, and it wasn't about the Russians. So he bungled that part of the story as well. Second of all, this is an intelligence committee. You're not supposed to be sharing that information publicly. God, he has botched this in every way imaginable. And then finally, it's called an intelligence committee, and he seems to lack it. So that's reason strike three as to why he should not be the head of this committee.
Yeah, but what you're overlooking, again, is that Trump was taking a lot of heat in the press.
Oh, good counterpoint. But that's why it's amazing. That's why I say he really is a knucklehead. Because he thinks that is a totally acceptable counterpoint.
That's okay to say, yeah.
Yes.
Do you remember that? He's on Fox News. He thinks John Hannity's going to go, yeah, yep, you're right. He thinks, yep. So that's why he said it. Maybe he's just a dummy, Garcia.
If there's ever anyone who deserves sympathy, it's Donald Trump for his treatment by the press. Not his treatment of the press, treatment by the press.
All right, let's move on. Yeah, let's move on to the Keystone Pipeline. Donald Trump has approved the necessary permits for the Keystone XL pipeline. Now, of course, this was a huge issue for environmentalists, and it was an issue that President Barack Obama decided to rule against back in 2015 when he said no permit for the continued construction of the pipeline. Now, this announcement is part of a new era of American energy policy that will lower costs for American families, and very significantly is the statement from Donald Trump as he granted the necessary permits. Also keep in mind, though, that the state of Nebraska will also have to approve permits for this, and there are landowners who are against it, so we'll see what happens. So the bottom line, Keystone finished, we're going to start construction when? That's what he said when he looked at the Trans-Canada CEO, Russ Girling, who replied that the company had some work to do in Nebraska. And Trump's response to him was, Nebraska? I'll call Nebraska. What? What does that even mean, right? I'll call Nebraska. Oh, I didn't know Nebraska had a phone number that I can, you know, hit up and be like, yo, Nebraska, can you hook it up with the permits?
So look, there's a lot of amazing parts of the story. So that's point one, which is this Donald Trump character goes out there. It's like, okay, Keystone Pipeline, done. We're finished with it.
He's a clown.
And then the TransCanada CEO has to say, not exactly, Donald. We still have to get clearance from Nebraska. And you see the question mark there in that sentence that Anna just read you? Nebraska. Well, I'll call Nebraska. Okay. So you didn't prepare at all. No one told you. You didn't ask. Like, can you imagine you're president of the United States? You're going to do a press conference in front of the whole world, and you didn't bother to ask, hey, are we done? And you just went out there and you blurted, oh, we're done. Keystone is going to get built. And then they have to correct you like you're a freaking child, which you are, in the middle of the press conference. Hey, Donald.
Yeah.
We didn't get permission from Nebraska, you idiot.
It's only the State Department approving it. That's it. That's all that's happened, right? I mean, we didn't get the permits. How does he not know that? How does he not know these things? How is he unable to answer that question about what was in the healthcare bill?
So interesting thing about the State Department did approve it, but remember, under Obama, the State Department had put out a pretty lengthy report about the environmental damage that the pipeline could cause here in the US, right? And so what did the State Department, the current State Department, do? They used the exact same report, the exact same wording from the previous State Department with obviously a completely different outcome. So it's kind of like, okay, under the Obama administration, 2 + 2 = 4. Under the Trump administration, you still have the same data, right? 2 + 2, but it equals 26.
Yeah, so that's super important. That's the second amazing part of this story. So again, it goes to laziness and carelessness by Trump and the Trump administration, because that could lead you to lose in court. In court, you have to justify this because they're going to get sued on it, right? And you have to say, no, we did a new analysis, and the analysis shows that in fact it's not going to cause environmental problems, yada, yada, yada. Now, if you're smart and devious and wanted to, or forget devious, let's say you're a right winger and you're like, pipelines are awesome and crude oil and let's mess up the ozone, it's going to be fun for everybody, we'll all get tans, whatever you believe. You wouldn't do it this way. You would be smart enough to go, oh, we did a new analysis and here's the results, and it shows you that it's not worth it. But they're so lazy and incompetent that he's like, okay, we're set, we're done. We just take the Obama analysis, we don't change it at all. We add some TransCanada things in there, okay? And then we Nebraska, what's Nebraska? Don't worry about it, we're done. Now the analysis shows we're right, they're wrong. Well, if you're a conservative, you got to be pissed, because this might have cost you the Keystone Pipeline on a day you should be celebrating.
Right.
He doesn't care to do the job. He doesn't. He's a child. He doesn't he's so over his head. He doesn't understand any of this, and he's too lazy to figure it out, and too insecure to ask important questions.
But to call Nebraska isn't easy, and that's his way. I mean, it's like, oh, you can't get a table, Mr. Trump. They're booked tonight. Oh, let me call them. I mean, that's really what it's like to him. And this
that's such a good analogy.
Nebraska is not a maitre d'.
give the guy Nebraska a little extra.
Yeah, give him a 20. Give
that's
Nebraska
for you.
A 20.
That's for you. That's for you. You're gonna take my call there. You go. I need a pipeline. But you know, the thing that the Keystone Pipeline couldn't happen unless we repealed the ban on exporting oil, right? We used to have a ban in this country on exporting oil. It got lifted in the spending bill in December of 2015. And so isn't that why we're able to do this in the first place? If we would have just kept that and Democrats signed on to that, that was Barack Obama. So are those two things connected together? Because this technically isn't United States oil. It's coming from Canada.
It's coming from Canada. Yeah, I don't know the answer whether or not those are connected. I mean, this was basically pushed by the conservatives as a jobs.
There's no jobs.
35 jobs. They say
35
jobs.
Permanent jobs. So there will be temporary jobs, but a small number. Let's quickly go to graphic 14. So Keystone Pipeline would create about 3,900 construction jobs if it was built in 1 year. And that's according to the State Department. The number would drop to 1,950 jobs if it happened in 2 years. But when it comes to permanent jobs, only 35 permanent employees would be needed to operate the pipeline, along with 15 temporary contractors. So again, it's not anything that's really going to help the American people. And I find it interesting because, as you know, Donald Trump is applauding this and congratulating himself, he also said the following, graphic 12. The years long fight over the project demonstrates how our government has too often failed its citizens and companies over the past long period of time. Okay, No. What you're doing right now is a perfect example of how government has failed the American people. Okay, this is not a popular pipeline. That's the reason why landowners in Nebraska don't want it. Environmentalists don't want it. People don't want it. This is honestly one of the dirtiest types of crude and does the most damage in terms of climate change. People don't want it. They don't want it. And so you are being influenced by corporate interests. That's exactly what has failed the American people. But again, I don't know if he's even smart enough to realize
that. Well, look, I've got to jump in there with a number of points. One is that in this press conference, they have TransCanada's CEO talking about how it's great for America. It's going to create thousands of jobs. No, dude, it's great for you, and you run TransCanada, not TransAmerica. So don't pretend here that you care about American jobs. You're not even from this country. So I don't know. By the way, technically, the CEO, I don't know where Russell Grilling's from. I know your company's not from us.
Right.
Yeah. So my point is that they always pretend like as if these companies are all American, like corporate America. They're not corporate America. Most of them are multinational corporations, and they don't care about American jobs. Now, if you're saying, no, but oh, those are, hey, you guys are probably lying, you libs. The number's about only adding 35. You know what? I'll give them the temporary guys. 50 jobs in the long term, right? That comes from the State Department, run by Rex Tillerson, former CEO of ExxonMobil. Mm-hmm. So, wow, the former CEO of ExxonMobil approved this pipeline. I didn't see that coming. And then you can't say we made it up. That's your homeboy. Rex Tillerson saying it's only 50 jobs.
And those numbers could date back to before Tillerson was there. But the point is also.
But then change them.
Because the pipeline is essentially built. So all those jobs that they're talking about, oh, temporary jobs, thousands of people working on this thing, it's already done, right? I mean, except for these stretches,
yes.
It's basically a built entity, so it's not even going to create that many temporary jobs.
Then finally, isn't it funny how our politics works? So when we're bringing in, to Jimmy's point, dangerous oil from Canada, which backs up what Anna was saying, this is actually emits 18% more greenhouse gases than regular types of oil, because it's considered literally called dirty oil, okay? And crude oil that is harder to extract and is less efficient and damages the ozone more. Okay, all that stuff, but that's okay, we could bring that in.
Yeah.
But when we have drugs, which are the same exact drugs from Canada, coming in, they go, oh no, that's dangerous.
Those
drugs are cheaper, even though they're the same exact drugs. They say, no, that's dangerous. Don't trust the Canadians. Yeah. Don't export their drugs.
But when it's
their dirty fuel, oh, the Canadians are great. They're looking out for us, bringing their dirty fuel.
When did you think of that?
Earlier today.
That's great.
That is good.
That's really good. I'm putting it in my act.
But I still love hockey.
Yeah. So wait. But there are actually other insane parts of this that we have to get to real quick, okay? So first of all, recently Donald Trump was in Kansas doing a rally because he's still running for president.
Did he call them first? Did he call Kansas first?
He called Kansas, right. And he's like, you know, I want to do a rally. And he did. And
he's going to beat Rubio in Kansas. He is.
So during that rally.
By the way, it was Kentucky. But that's
sorry.
Okay.
It was Kentucky. Yes.
During that rally, he's like, you know, for this pipeline, we're going to use U.S. steel. We're going to use American steel, and we're going to make sure that it's all American. And then guess what he's saying now? Dick. Right? Uh-huh. So now all of a sudden, U.S. steel is not a priority. In fact, he had said earlier that he is not going to, impose any type of rule regarding the steel when it comes to this corporation. So U.S. Steel, what name? So that's not happening.
You're forcing me to ask a question to these guys that I promised I would ask. I'm sorry, did I?
Go ahead, ask the question.
No,
there's another part that I want to get to.
I don't watch cable news. I think you guys might, and even you might have slightly different perspectives on it, but I think you both watch cable news a lot more than I do, Michael and Jimmy. Do they point out all the time that, hey, he said that he would use American steel, but now says,
I'm not going to use American steel.
Of course they don't.
Well, they do point out his inconsistencies and his and when I haven't heard this one specific thing, but they do spend a decent amount of time, both tongue in cheek and in actual reporting, going over what he said and then how he changed that.
And then I'm again deeply curious, genuinely, because I don't watch it. Do they emphasize it only creates 35 to 50 jobs? Or do they just let that slide?
I've seen the other. I've seen actual CNN hosts argue the other thing against Bernie Sanders, but not recently.
Okay, so I've been watching and listening to a lot of cable news recently. And so I will give CNN at least credit, because you're right, they hate Trump, and I think it's pretty obvious. And so they do point out his inconsistencies on some issues. With this particular issue, I don't know. They don't really do much coverage on the Keystone XL pipeline anyway. So I don't know.
I saw Cuomo cover it when he was interviewing Bernie Sanders, and he brought up, what about the jobs? And Bernie says, it's only going to be 35 permanent jobs. And he said, well, that's not what the union said. So Chris was actually arguing the wrong way that way. But that was a few months ago. Yeah,
they haven't talked about it much recently. I mean, this sort of broke early this morning. Yeah. And it hasn't been something because of everything else. It hasn't been something that's been
So sorry, last point.
Yes, last point. And I think that this is probably one of the most important points, actually. So, you know, as he is, you know, talking about the Keystone XL pipeline, he also chided or went after the CEO because of the lobbying effort under the Obama administration. Ooh. And how it didn't work. Okay, so let's go to graphic 13. So Trump told him, saying all the company's previous lobbying had been in vain. In fact, you should ask for your hundreds of millions back, because they didn't do a damn thing except get you a no vote. Okay, I think that's so important, because what did Donald Trump, you know, appear to be for a lot of people who voted for him? Oh, I'm anti-establishment. I don't need their money. I don't believe in this corrupt system. I'm going to switch things up. No. He has benefited from the corrupt system, okay? He has profited from the corrupt system. He knows how the corrupt system works. In fact, he's giving this CEO some freaking advice. And he's like, hey, make sure if you're going to, you know, spend hundreds of millions of dollars in lobbying, you're going to get what you want. He's not against that system. He freaking loves that system.
No, I love that you brought up that quote, Anna, because I think it goes even further than that. He's basically saying to him, which, by the way, he should be saying behind closed doors, but he's so unsophisticated, he's saying it out in front of everybody. He's saying, you should have given that money to me and the Republicans. Then I would have gotten you the results you want. Look at that, you got the results right now. So I'm the right guy to bribe, not the Democrats. He's so brazen about it. I know that he thinks his supporters are so stupid that they'll never figure it out, even if he announces in front of the whole world, hey, you should have given me the bribe instead of the other guys. One day they might figure it out if you keep saying it over and over again.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, we're way out of time.
But okay. I do know that I speak for everybody when I say that we hope that senior, at this tumultuous time, that senior White House aide Jared Kushner is enjoying his time in Aspen.
Okay, everybody check out the Jimmy Dore show.
Next live show, April 23rd.
Where can they find out about it?
JimmyDoreComedy.com.
How do you spell that?
It's actually JimmyDoreComedy.com. Okay, thank you, Michael Shore. And when we come back, we've got Ida Rodriguez, we've got Hassan Piker, and most importantly, the most important story we might have ever done, NAD Plus. So whatever you do, not only check out that story, but don't die in the meanwhile. Okay? We'll explain when we come back.